Well, could this be your final moment of enlightenment, your last hour? Nah, you'll still have it. We'll be back in a moment. Your phone calls with David Cereda on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, David, tell me again about this theory of that the Earth is shrouded with this field.
That's Professor Roger Nelson, who's the director of the Princeton Global Consciousness Project, who introduced that to me when I was interviewing him. And these random event generators that they developed, the way they work is quite complicated. But essentially, they have over 60 of them placed all over the globe, and they have 30 operating at any given time. Essentially, what happens is they start to yield a very powerful signal that a major event is about to occur. And it doesn't matter where they place them, they all go off, and they all give the same data, that there is something major about to happen. And he kind of laughs, and he says, when these things start to trigger, it's like, be afraid. But they don't know whether it's going to be a super positive event or a negative one yet. They haven't perfected the technology. But the importance of it is that it verifies that this field exists, that the Earth itself has precognition to these events. They see the data, for example, hours before the assassination of Yitzhak Rabin. They could see the signal going way up, and they knew something was going to happen. And then on the waveform data, you can see the spike at the moment of the assassination. And then when the compassion, the global compassion ensues, because, of course, Yitzhak won the Nobel Peace Prize, and you see this overwhelming amount of compassion. What Roger Nelson and the Global Consciousness Project have discovered is that compassion yields the strongest signals in the global sphere. But nevertheless, time and time again, and they've been doing this since the 1980s, and they're very, you know, this is Princeton University, where Einstein lived, where John Nash, you know, from Beautiful Mind lives today, where Edward Witten, one of the greatest physicists, is today. And considering this is going on at Princeton, and that they didn't really want to release their results until decades of trial and over again and proving the technology, it's really amazing to hear the words coming out of Roger Nelson's mouth in the film, The Voice, because he's saying that literally that the Earth is conscious and it knows things before they're about to happen. He cites Teilhard de Chardin, the Jesuit priest who came up with the concept that when humankind evolved the next major leap in evolution, that the sphere of the planet would be the actual next step in evolution. We'd become a collective consciousness, a global mind. And really, we have to attain singularity to do that. We have to come to the point, because if you get, like, there's almost 7 billion people on the planet, and if half of the people are against an event or something manifesting, and the other half are for it, they will cancel out each other's energy, and the manifestation will have very little leftover energy in the competition. And that's why, as long as we're competing against each other religiously and we're fighting these wars, we're wasting all of our total global consciousness energy. But with the advent of media and radio and television, when an event happened, for example, the funeral for Princess Diana, the overwhelming amount of compassion magnifies with media because everybody gets to tune into that event. And the data on these generators, which are not like EEGs that you actually connect wires to the human brain, these things are non-local. They have no connection to any organism on the planet, not to plants, not to anything. And they go off every single time, thousands and thousands of times over a 20-year period. So it's much greater than modest when a scientist at this magnitude comes forward and says there really is a global sphere, there really is oneness, we really are all one. And in fact, we bring up the issue of entanglement. Entanglement is something in relation to spooky action at a distance. Scientists found that when any two waveforms are entangled and they have a relationship and you separate them, they can communicate with each other instantaneously. Roger Nelson, when I asked him, is it possible that all of humanity is entangled, that we are all connected? And he takes me all the way back in the film to the Big Bang. And at the moment of the Big Bang, if you believe this, that all the four nuclear forces, the strong force, the weak force, you know, gravity and electromagnetism were one, all the forces were entangled. And then they separated, the four forces separated as the universe exploded and expanded and cooled off, which means that the whole universe is entangled, which means that really it can all communicate with each other over any distance instantaneously if you know how to get in touch with singularity.
And right, I'm sorry, David, finish up.
We'll that's it. So what it does is it scientifically proves that these spheres of oneness are really real. And that strengthens the scientific case for the scientific proof for God.
Okay, to the phones we go. Let's go to you, west of the Rockies. Hello there.
Good evening, gentlemen. This is Jeannie in Colorado.
Hey, Jeannie.
And this is so exciting of a subject for me because I know very few people who do this, David, and so it's hard to talk to people about it. Let me just preface this before my question, and that is, gives a new meaning to the verses that talk about if you look upon the face of God, you are not able to live. Mm-hmm. Because when you get to that place, it is so tremendous. There's just not enough superlatives to describe it. Mm-hmm. But if I do this by myself and I need to be grounded, I think you need to be grounded, and that's part of what the meditation is for, so you can come back safely, so to speak. But I do this with another person. And it's interesting, you know, you talk about your aura extending out a few feet. We kind of combine auras so that it's like one entity, sort of. Mm-hmm. And then when we go, we kind of tether each other. We're very grounded and safe that way. And as we have gone through different levels, it is so much like a birthing process. I don't know if that's your experience, almost through like a birthing process to the next place.
Oh, yeah.
But what I wanted to ask you is, this last time we went as high as we've ever been, and we've been throughout the universe, and it's just, you know what I'm saying. But we went to a place that we decided if you weren't grounded or tethered, as we call it, and you just came back, you would be in such a state that I wonder if it would maybe manifest as schizophrenia in people.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. That's a great question. It happens to many people. In fact, I asked Roger Nelson at Princeton University, that is it common for people like John Nash to become schizophrenic? And it is, it turns out. And I know many people who have been on the spiritual path who have reached these super luminal fields, and they have temporarily battled mental illness because it's so powerful. And the magnitude of the levels of ecstasy and cosmic mind are so enormous. If you're not ready, it can really devastate you temporarily until you do get grounded. When I saw Jesus Christ the first time, I only looked at his face for a second each glance. It was like the whole universe was coming from him, and the entirety of the entire cosmos I started to expand into as I looked at his face. And he said to me, "I have appeared to a number of people throughout history, but at different levels of their spiritual ability. No one has ever seen me in my entirety. It is impossible." And that's essentially what you're saying, is that no one can look at God in God's entirety. And because if you look at how much energy it took to create the solar system, and then our galaxy, and then the 100 million galaxies in the universe, who could ever stare that down? Nobody. Not even Dante, when he reaches the ninth sphere, which is way beyond anywhere I've ever been, he finally, Saint Bernard takes him by the hand, and he gets to look at the face of Jesus inside of the ninth sphere. And he lasts 1 minute, and he's just torrentially devastated by the super cosmic power of creation shining from the face of Christ, and he just falls on the ground, and Saint Bernard takes him by the hand, and it takes him a long time to recover. Nobody can do this, and that's why, when we consider why are we all going to war over the issue of God when not one human being is capable of even identifying the God in its totality. I mean, this is not something we should be going to war over. The field of God consciousness is something we can attain. We can enter into these these nine levels or these nine spheres, and who knows, you know, what's beyond the ninth. I don't think any human being could know. But, you know, to answer your question, you know, as we join together in group meditations, it can be very powerful. And we do have to be careful to not trespass and be humble and know when you've gone too far. You know, I knew when I was at the border of the seventh, it could be a million years before I'm ready to cross into nirvana. I have no idea, because all I know is I had reached my limit. I couldn't take any more. And this stuff is really powerful. I mean, enlightenment is way beyond the greatest scope of the imagination, billions of times beyond that. The earlier caller was mentioning the use of plants and drugs. I mean, they've done brain scans of people who have done the drug ecstasy, and their brains look like cottage cheese. They're getting high off of killing brain cells. The high they're getting off of doing drugs is not even, it doesn't even register compared to the samadhis in nirvana. It's not even on the same, even the first samadhi would dwarf all drug experiences by millions of times.
All right, first time caller line. You're on with David Serrata. Hi there.
Me?
Yes, it is me.
Oh, hey. How are you? Good. David, I have, 1992, received a terma of the Maitreya cycle. It's called Maitri Vijayasridaya. And I have, you know, when I received it, while in a retreat for 7 days and such, and I was supposed to give it out in 10 years or so, and I have even the students that I had around me, because I'm Lama. I had to recently separate myself from everybody, just me and my Dakini, my consort. And I've received threats, death threats from other lamas of some of the lineages. And I know it's all regarding this terma. But my question is, and I've never thought of ever offering it to anybody, but from hearing you, you seem like the first person I've met in 15 years that I'd like to say, would you like it? It's a meditation of nothing but compassion and love. You know, it's centered around the statement, Om Maitri Maitreya Mahakaruna Ye. It's 12 syllables combine all the potentiality of the 12 points of codependent origination. And it is an Anuttara Yoga Tantra of the highest, Mahamudra level. It is a 10th Bhumi Bodhisattva practice. And I'd like to offer it to you if you'd like it.
Well, send me an email to davidserrata@hotmail.com. For those of you people, you know, Maitreya is one of the 8 great bodhisattvas in Buddhism who many Buddhists believe will become a future Buddha incarnate on Earth. And so that's one of the things that he's talking about. But the best thing to do is to send me an email to davidserrata@hotmail.com, and I'll take a look at it. And I do read most of my emails. So,
okay, let's go next to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast with David Serrata. Hi there.
Hi, George. How are you?
Good. Thank you.
Good. This is great. I'm so excited about your program. It's one of the most important ones I've heard so far, and the fact that you reach over 6 million people on a daily basis, you realize that you raise the consciousness of the planet by just raising the consciousness of one human being. The whole planet gets booped up, which is quite interesting. I wanted to mention something about not torturing yourself in order to reach samadhi. And I've been through that experience. I believe I was through the. I went through the experience by illness. In other words, I had a near-death experience in Africa. I had malaria. I was a wandering ascetic, or a hippie, as people like to call it, back in the 70s.
Wow!
And I hitchhiked around the world and lived in India and lived in Africa. And when we were in Africa, the hotels were a lot more expensive than India. India, we were paying about $1 a day. And I know in Afghanistan, it was 50 cents a day. So we were kind of spoiled once we got to Africa. And they told us that the hotel was $25 a night. We couldn't afford to stay there, so we slept on the edge of the Malawi River and on the sand and just covered our faces for the mosquitoes, you know, with a cloth that we had brought from the Arab countries that they usually put on their head. And through the night, for some reason, I felt a mosquito hit me. It was an Anopheles, obviously, right on my third eye. And we were more concerned about the hippo that was supposed to come up at night, you know, that on the shore of Malawi, of the lake, and we're watching out for the hippo. So we didn't really care about the mosquitoes. We just didn't want to be trampled. And the lady said, well, don't worry about the hippo. It's only a baby, you know. And there it was at night. But anyway, when I woke up in the morning, we traveled north to go to Nairobi, and it took like 2 days in a bus. And because I was so exhausted and we didn't sleep, I came down with malaria by the time we reached Nairobi. And the first, it was about the first day that I couldn't move. It was like I had the worst headache I'd ever had in my life from head to toe. It was just, the pain was horrendous. But after about 24 hours, I would imagine, everyone left the room and I was there alone, and all of a sudden it was like the room opened up. It like cracked like an egg. That's the only way I could describe it.
Wow.
And my soul just went right through it and into the outside. And it's like we live inside an egg. And I went into reality, which was full of light and colors and rainbow. And the music was so incredible, and I felt like I was a huge ear, and all I could hear was celestial music. And I know I was in samadhi because I
Oh, sure you were.
A lot of people have different experiences like that, David.
Well, you know, she describes the cracking of the egg, and that's what in the first sphere of heaven I saw the 100,000 egg-shaped spheres of the human beings who had passed away. And some of them are ready to crack, and some of them aren't. And sometimes it takes a very painful experience to crack the egg open into the cosmos. And it's not as traumatic in the future, but in the beginning it can be traumatic. And then when you finally get into the light, it's all just pure bliss. It's spectacular.
So, David, are you, you know, what's the plan with the movie The Voice? When does it come out?
Well, we're taking orders now. It delivers at the end of the month. I mean, I'll have DVDs the first week of January. It's 2.5 hours long, and we're making all of the unedited material because we've interviewed incredible people for, like, you know, 2 hours, some of them, and we're turning them into MP3 audio files. So anybody you see in the film you like, you can either go to the store on the website or become a member, and you can have unlimited access to all of the interviews. And every week we'll be doing deeper discussions and recording them as podcasts, you know, for the website. And because the subject is just, it's just an enormous, enormous area, and there's so many people who want to learn how to go into these deeper states of consciousness. So,
all right, stay with us. We'll be back with final phone calls with David Cereda on Coast to Coast AM. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, Barbara Hand Clow joins us. The Mayan Code. That's right, 2012. Well, David, as we come down the home stretch, let's go back to the phones. We'll pick it up by going to you, Wildcard Line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi there, George. This is Ann Albers out in Phoenix, Arizona.
And, hey, Ann.
I'm one of these people that radically switched careers early on, as you discussed at the beginning of your show. And I'm also one of the participants in David's film. And one of the things I've found is that the quest for enlightenment does even more than make you blissfully happy. It also helps you with very practical matters like not worrying about finances and dealing with relationship issues. And I'd like David to just comment for the listeners on how the film The Voice is going to help them, not just in the meditations and in greater states of happiness, I mean, that's enough, but also in dealing with the everyday concerns of life.
All right. Go ahead, David. Thank you.
Well, what happens is as we go into more expanded states of consciousness, it's not just bliss that we get access to in the eradication of suffering. We get into higher spheres of intelligence and our abilities to problem solve and live more harmoniously with others and to attract our soulmate. It just becomes stronger and much more clear. I mean, even the issue of entanglement in physics. Remember whatever was joined together and is separated, those fields can communicate with each other at a distance. So it means if you have a soulmate out there and you are truly entangled with them spiritually, you are already in contact with them. So you just need to communicate with that within your sphere of consciousness, and you will find each other. It will happen. And Ann Albers is in the film, and it's really, her story is really amazing. She was an aerospace engineer working at McDonnell Douglas, and, you know, a very successful career. She's one of those examples of people who are on the straight and narrow. They're on this path, and a spiritual epiphany happens. You have this experience, and you can't explain it, but you want more. And it causes people to transform their careers even and move into other areas of how to make a living, maybe less money but more fulfilling. You know, in Buddhism, you have something called right livelihood, which is what you do for a living is affecting you energetically. So success in meditation comes from not just sitting there meditating, waiting for bliss. It comes from integrating intelligence, choosing things and careers that are going to make you more happy, not necessarily more money. And, you know, finding ultimately your dream job and your soulmate, by meditating every day, those things start to manifest more easily for you.
Okay, let's go to our international line. Thank you for holding so long. You're on the air.
Thank you. Sure. Well, Merry Christmas and Yule, George and David.
Thank you.
Anyway, I was listening, enjoying the show, but I was sort of surprised, David, that you're kind of, after all the experiences and expansive awareness that you've achieved, still talking about the devil. You know, I want to talk, maybe if I could mention, describe quickly a meditation I had about kind of evil, and kind of Shriekback 80s band has a song called Everything That Rises Must Converge, and it sort of has to do with my experience. Early in my Wicca experience, I developed like a strawberry field sort of place I would go to repeatedly in meditations, which was sort of lower astral, but that's kind of animal guides and stuff like that there. And one time I ran into this being that was like humanoid, like 10 feet tall, like elongated, bald head. It seemed sort of vampiric, very strong, very powerful, kind of. I definitely felt fear about this being. I thought it was very negative. But it turned out over a few years that I would run into him again and again, and each time it seemed he became less sort of threatening, and it certainly came to my awareness that this was representing parts of myself that were very powerful, but maybe I wasn't quite ready to handle, or that I had to be more sure my motivations were coming from a spiritual place rather than an ego-based place to sort of assimilate the energies that this being kind of represented. And I sort of see it as, you know, potentially is there a Lucifer? Well, is there a devil? Well, I'm not so sure. And I think that, yes, there are demons. Yes, there are what could probably be described as anti-human intelligences in our universe. But I think that even they have to be kind of brought along, if you know what I mean. And Ozark Mountain Daredevils have a song about it. Every, you know, if you want to get to heaven, you got to raise a little hell. And that,
yeah. No,
you know, free the humans. That's my keyword these days.
I mean, Buddha says eventually all beings will attain nirvana. I mean, even those that are stuck in duality will eventually attain nirvana if it takes them, you know, millions or billions of years. And you know, if you look at what Paul Dirac discovered about the field of singularity, in singularity, or imagine a field of peace, and then put a conflict in the peace. A conflict can't survive in a field of peace because it's conflict. It's a lower vibration than peace. So when I say Satan, first of all, it's not an experience I have. I've only had to see this being, you know, one or two times many, many years ago, and I don't encounter demonic beings at all
anymore.
And
I'm sure you don't look forward to seeing them again.
No, you don't look forward to seeing them, but I really believe they exist. They were the first angels who took in conflict, and conflict can't exist in a state of peace. So they fall, and they radiate pure conflict energy. Now, to say that they don't exist, I mean, there's a saying, you know, a proverbial saying that Satan's greatest achievement is he convinced the world he doesn't exist. Well, conflict exists. We go to war with each other. We create hell on earth. So the force is there, whether it's invisible, it has a field, it can envelop people with its ignorance of conflict, and it does a pretty good job at that. So it is real. But I agree with the caller. I mean, ultimately, raise hell. Get this conflict to come into peace. Get the beings that are in it and give them love. Have compassion for them as well. And I totally agree with that.
Okay, next up, we'll go to our wild card line, and it's your turn. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello.
Yes.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Yeah, this one of them shows I wish you'd do a couple of more hours of. But anyway, I got a question. I know I heard about the drugs part, but it seemed to me every time when I'm upset or stressed or something drastic happened, I can focus and meditate and get a prayer through. I want to ask, is there any type of herbs or something you can take to help you relax and meditate more? Not drugs, but something natural. They stimulate the mind.
Well, you can take things like valerian or chamomile tea will help relax you a little bit. But ultimately, you know, creating a nice environment for yourself to meditate, like burning some incense, it can help you to relax. Having a hot bath, you don't have to suffer your way through meditation. I mean, you can do it in a gradual way, like increase the time that you meditate over the years. Don't go to 2 hours right away. You know, start with 20 minutes, work your way up to a half an hour a day. It's better to meditate every day for 10 minutes than to meditate an hour, you know, once a month or every couple of days. It's better to be consistent, and slowly you'll find that you'll want to meditate more. It will happen gradually, but don't be in a hurry. You know, you have your whole life to learn how to meditate, people. And if you're really stressed out sometimes I meditate no matter what. If I've had the worst day, and it can be miraculous. Within 20 minutes, I'm just feeling fantastic. So, yeah.
All right. Next up, east of the Rockies, your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George. John calling from New Baltimore, Michigan.
Hey, John. Thanks.
I had a trip to Europe in the end of September and early October. And well, we toured Poland. We went there for a wedding, and we toured Poland for a week. And we visited a lot of churches and stuff. And, you know, I was raised Catholic. And we were in Warsaw. And I had a prophetic dream. It came to me in this dream. Well, okay, you're familiar with 8 Mile and Kelly over here in the Detroit area.
Oh, yeah.
What happened was I was walking through a plaza, and there was people saying my name. This was all in my lucid dream. I think it was a lucid dream. I don't know. That's kind of what my question is. So they're saying, hi, John, hi. And I'm just, like, not really looking at anybody. And I cruise through the plaza, and then there's big piles of snow on each side of me. And this black entity comes up on one side, and I said to it, what are you? And he goes, I'm all the bad things that you've ever done in the past. And then there's another one streaks by, and I go, who's that? And they go, that's all the bad things you've ever done or you're going to do in the future. And I go, I don't want nothing to do with either yet. And I jumped all the way across 8 Mile Road, all the way across Kelly Road. And right then, when I was on Kelly and 8 Mile, a snowplow came by. And it came to me then that on December the 16th, we were going to have, I thought, 18 inches of snow. But it ended up being 8 to 10 inches of snow. But it came through just clear as could be. And when I got back, like, in October, and I was telling some friends, man, watch this. December the 16th, we're going to have a major snowfall, you know. And it actually occurred. And that's the wild part, you know, that it actually did happen, you know. I work for the phone company. I'm working 7 days over there. I do the newspapers on the side.
Jeez.
And I don't really have any extra time to meditate or do anything. But while we were on this tour of Europe, we also went to Italy. And I got some pretty good pictures, George, that you'll be impressed with as far as, in Gdansk, where buildings got knocked down and that. There's, like,
yeah.
pit faces in the shadows and stuff like that.
Okay. Well, get those to us. I'd love to see them.
No, it's a very deep, lucid dream where prophecy or prophetic things can occur. He encountered his own demonic, his own, you know, guilt and sin for bad things he's done. You know, I'm Catholic also, by the way, Catholic mystic, and I love deep Catholic mysticism. And, you know, it's not, when you see something and you know that you've done bad things and you know you've done things to harm other people, I mean, it's pretty obvious what to do, I think. You know, we need to make a greater effort to be more kind to others and more compassionate.
Let's go to our next wild card line. Go ahead, please. You're on with David Cereda.
Good morning, George and David.
Hey, Greg.
Let me say this is an awe-inspiring show. And, David, you got me to thinking when you stated the Earth and the planets and the universe are all alive. So I got to wondering if that doesn't that apply also to the Holy Bible and the so-called Bible code that apparently does prophesy, and I find it incredibly accurate. And I wondered, do those prophecies change in the Bible code as we, the people of Earth, change, and can we, in fact, change the prophecies or alter the future by our actions and our faith in God?
Well, I think there's no doubt the more we evolve spiritually, we can change the future. We don't have to have, you know, World War III and the Battle of Armageddon. It's our choice to go to war with each other. We can avoid that. You know, the Bible code books, I've read all of them, and they predict a lot of things that we already know. What I want to see is a prediction of something we don't know, and it helps us avoid that disaster.
I agree wholeheartedly. Let's go to our West of the Rockies line. Go ahead, sir. You're on Coast to Coast.
Yes. Hi. Thank you. I was taken to the light about 40 years ago, and there was a Fabergé egg, two round windows, one in the end and one on the side. And when I looked in the end, everything was in there, all the universes, just everything.
Wow.
Then when I looked in the side, it was like my eye, I could like telescope. So I looked, and there was our solar system, and then our Earth, and then the area I lived in California, and then on down into the house that I was actually lying in at the time. Since that time, I've had some really weird things happen, very close brushes with death. I was awakened by an angel once, calling my name twice, and it ended up saving my sister and my life. So what I wanted to know is if there's a book or I have no idea how to meditate, and I would like to know because I feel there must be a reason for all this.
Well, I do have meditation lessons on my website at voiceentertainment.net for those who want to try to practice them. But whatever your religion is, and I encourage people to stay with their own religion, what their beliefs are, but the meditation process that I teach is not religious. You can incorporate it into any religion or any belief. The next stage of meditation is prayer, which is alignment. I do Hail Marys and Our Fathers at the end of my meditation. And what that does is it aligns me with my master force. It aligns my field with the field that I want nourishment from. So whatever religion you are or deity you believe in, prayer is very powerful because it brings you into alignment with your masters, and they can guide you. But the main thing is to be able to sit still in silence and go within and increase your awareness of presence. But there are very specific techniques that will help you do that, and I do have those on my website.
First-time caller line, you're up on Coast to Coast. Hi.
Hello, this is Brian from California.
Hi, Brian. Go ahead, sir.
Hello, gentlemen. I wanted to thank you guys for covering such an excellent subject and helping the world become more aware of themselves and getting back to singularity as a whole.
Sure,
David.
Sir. Thank you.
You were talking about that you've seen the face of Jesus, and you now believe that he is the reincarnation of God. Do I have that correct?
No, I believe he was God incarnate in the flesh. I mean, as much as humans were capable of seeing at that time when he was in the flesh. He did reveal his higher self in the transfigurations, but still it was only what people were capable of perceiving. So to say, you know, God in the flesh, I really believe Jesus is exactly who he says he is. So, yes.
But he was a man just like the rest of us and attained that awareness.
I believe he was born that way. I don't believe he attained it. Yeah, I think Buddha attained it, but Jesus always was that. He never was not. He always was supreme.
Is this something that he told you or that you just believed?
No, I saw it when I looked at him. I didn't even need him to say it. It's just so clear looking at him that in studying the scriptures, I've read all of the Gnostic manuscripts, the Bible, the canonized gospels, I mean, everything. And it's very clear to me that, you know, that he is God incarnate. When, if you think of the entire field of singularity, which is an infinitum of consciousness in the universe, it can take birth in human form. Maybe it can take birth in a planetary form. So for humans, we see God in human form, but we're very limited to what we can perceive of that incarnation. We can only see as much as we're capable of, and that's why even in the Gnostic Gospels, for example, in the Gospel of Philip, it says Jesus took them all by stealth, for he appeared to the greatest, greeting the angels as an angel, and to men as a man, even though his true power hid itself from virtually everyone.
David, we're out of time. Get your website out real quickly for us.
It's www.voiceentertainment.net. That's where you can get the film The Voice and the film Water. We just landed from Russia. Sold 3 million copies in Russia. You've got to see the movie to find out why.
All right. Thank you so much, David. It's always great having you on the program. For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Ladasur, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.